to give him a bath and,
mm-hmm.
you know, have
oh, we're going live
bed delivered to the door.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to put this down.
I think that's the music.
Yeah, we're going live, so. Crazy Blog Talk. Happy Tuesday, everyone, and welcome to the HD View Celebrates. JHD and HD Advocates. Tonight we have four amazing women of JHD and HD here to share with us their lives and the advocacy missions that they have embarked upon. Each of these amazing women are so interesting and unique with different backgrounds and amazing stories. Call-in numbers tonight are 310-982-4227 and 877-497-4103. When you call in, press 1, we'll cue you into the show. And thank you, 89,000 listeners, for tuning in to Help for HD Radio. All of our programs are recorded live and archived for you to download and share. We are in our fifth season now and still going strong. Every week we bring you new topics about JHD and HD, incredible biographies, cutting-edge science and researchers, amazing advocates, care providers, and support services for the Huntington's community. Huntington's disease is a neurodegenerative and neuropsychiatric disorder that is genetic. That means it's passed down generation to generation. The symptoms are declining cognition, which is understanding behavior, movement manifestations, and there's no treatment or therapy to slow progression, and there's no cure. The juvenile form is more devastating with dystonia, pain, and seizures. Progression is typically more rapid. We need more awareness of this disease to bring research and care to a higher level of urgency. And tonight we're going to celebrate our advocates and introduce each one of our celebrated advocates separately to get to know them a little bit. And then in the last segment, we'll have a roundtable discussion about some of the different activities in which they have participated and their advocacy roles. Our first incredible, amazing advocate is Sharon Thomason from Tallahassee, Florida. I am proud to be working with Sharon at Help for HD International. Sharon is our community education manager and our managing editor at the Huntington's Post, our online newspaper. Pretty much everyone I know knows and loves Sharon, and she is a great communicator in social media and the Internet, and she always has a kind word, a kind advice. But there is another side to her, and that is she is a fighter for HD. So welcome to the show. Sharon, how are you tonight?
Oh, thank you, Melissa. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm hanging in there, too. You know, holidays are hard sometimes. But
yes.
Anyway, tell us how HD has impacted your life.
It has changed everything I ever imagined about my life. You know, when I got married, I thought that we were going to grow old together and have children and grandchildren and all the things that couples usually dream of. And, of course, that wasn't the way things played out for us at all. And then when my son was diagnosed, it's like my world just fell apart. There have been a lot of struggles because he's had primarily the behavioral and psychiatric and cognitive symptoms. Mm-hmm. And it's been very difficult to get treatment, to get people to listen and acknowledge that yes, he does have Huntington's, and that's what's going on here. And so it's really turned me into a fighter. And I don't think anything else would have ever done that. I was always a real shy wallflower kind of girl. And this disease has just brought out the warrior in me. I retired a little over a year ago, and of course I'm not doing anything that I had dreamed I would be doing in retirement. That's okay. You know, I've got my son, I've got him home with me, and I'm going to keep them here with me for as long as I possibly can, and I'll just keep fighting.
Yeah, it's definitely a life changer, right?
Yeah. Yeah, in every possible way.
Yep, yep. Let me just let Vicki know. Go ahead and, Vicki, ask Tom to click on the link, the show link. He should be able to listen live.
He's listening.
Oh, good.
I got it. Yeah, he's in there.
Okay, back to Sharon. What advice would you have for someone who is new to this world that we live in, the JHDHD world?
Oh, Network. Mm-hmm. It's so different now than it was when my husband was diagnosed. It's a very isolating disease. It's isolating for the people who have it because they feel different and they feel like people are looking at them funny and they feel awkward. But it's isolating for the caregivers, too, because your friends begin to fall away. You can't always go and do the things that they want to go and do. And one of the things that has been most empowering to me has been to be able to network with other people through Facebook and through online groups. Other people who are dealing with JHD and HD, and they've been there, done there, got the T-shirt, and they get it when nobody else does. And I think that's the most important thing that anybody can do. I mean, obviously you want to find a good doctor, and you want to find what kind of medications might be helpful and that sort of stuff. But most of that, you're going to learn from other people who have been living with HD.
Right. Well, that was one of the reasons why I wanted to do the radio show is because it seemed like there was kind of a disconnect between research and care and our community. And so being able to provide, we have over 30 shows from Dr. LaVon Goodman, Ask Dr. Goodman show, on every, on different topics. Every show is a different topic of dealing with Huntington's and that kind of thing. So it's so important, like you said, to network and don't be afraid to ask questions. It's okay if you don't know the answer.
Exactly.
Somebody will help you find the answer,
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, that's
a
good point.
And to go into the archives of the Blog Talk Radio, you can find advice on so many different aspects of the disease.
Yeah. We have, I think, more than 200 episodes now.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. We're in our fifth season, so that's going on 5 years.
Mm-hmm.
What are some of the ways in which we could fight to win in advocacy? Because sometimes we feel like we're just spinning our wheels.
That's a tough one to answer because, how do you define winning? For me, a win is anytime I make somebody aware of this disease that didn't know about it before.
Mm-hmm.
That's one more person that's at least heard of Huntington's disease. And I talk about it to anybody that'll listen. I was at a Christmas party this afternoon, and some of the people were friends, people that I've worked with, and some were people I had never met. And one of the ladies that I had taught with was asking how my son was doing, and that led to somebody asking, what's wrong with him? And I said, Huntington's disease. And so there were a couple of people sitting there, and, what is Huntington's disease? So it was an opportunity to just give a quick little education. And those opportunities pop up all the time. I've had people ask me about it because I have a magnet a QHD magnet on the back of my car.
Oh.
Or I have a bracelet that I wear, and I have several HD T-shirts that I wear from time to time, and things like that, just conversations.
Yep. Very good point. Well, guess who we have with us here now? Roberta Brink. She
hey,
is from
Roberta.
Panora, Iowa.
Hi.
Roberta has HD on both sides of her family. She's married to Bruce and loves dogs, I see, on her Facebook page, and Disney movies and Happy Feet and more dogs. And I saw your Jib Jab videos. That was great. Too funny. So welcome to the show, Roberta. How are you?
Thank you very much. I'm doing well. How about yourself?
Very good. Well, okay, so Roberta, when did you find out about Huntington's disease? When did you first find out about Huntington's?
Okay, I'm going to age myself because I was only 15 years old, and it was 1970. So if you do the math, I just aged myself. But I was in high school, a freshman in high school, and my sister pulled me aside and told me, do you know what's wrong with one of my uncles? And I said, well, I thought it was MS. And she said, no, I've been doing some research. Her and Dad had secretly been doing research because Mom never mentioned it. Her mother had passed away with Huntington's disease, and she had never mentioned it. So Dad felt that she didn't want to talk about it, and he found out from her dad. And so they were doing secret research, and she found out all this stuff, and she said, yeah, she said, our uncle has Huntington's disease, and that means Mom could get it, and if Mom gets it, we can get it. And I'm like, okay, what is this? What are you talking about? So that just kind of caused a big conversation. And then when Mom found out, she caught them doing their research and said, what's all this? And so they told her what was going on, and she had no clue. She had absolutely no clue. That's why her mother died.
Mm, so, wow.
That how started the conversation.
Yeah, how did that change your life? I bet it just turned your world upside down, right?
After living all these years of knowing of HD, I wish there was one woman I met when I was in my 30s. I wish I had met her when I was 15, because she said the key to living with HD is to plan your life like you have it, live your life like you do not have it.
I've heard
and
that.
I planned my life like I had it, and I lived my life like I had it. And I lived my life in five-year increments. I would never plan more than 5 years down the road because I thought, okay, in 5 years I'm going to be in a wheelchair, or in 5 years I'm going to start stumbling, or I won't be able to work. So I would just plan just 5 years ahead of time. And I learned in 1996 that I tested negative, and then it was like I was hit with a brick and had to start planning my life. It was
that's a good thing,
instead
though,
right? Of jumping up and down and screaming, I'm like, oh my, now what? I have to plan a life.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So
wow.
Like,
but thank God, right? Thank God you.
Yes. Yes.
And now, do you have children?
I do. I have two biological sons, and then my husband has two sons.
Mm-hmm. So your kids are safe now. So. Thank you, God.
Yeah, my kids are
safe. Oh, that's wonderful. But tell us about your mom, because in your bio I read about your mom being very impactful in your mission for advocacy.
Yes, after she found out it was in our family, she started doing tons of research, because all we could find is one tiny little paragraph in the encyclopedia, and that was it.
Oh,
and so
goodness.
She started doing all kinds of research. She got hooked up with Marjorie Guthrie. Marjorie Guthrie came to Iowa and helped us We already had a support group going, but she came and gave it kind of a kick in the rear and got it going really well. She's amazing.
Good.
She was such an amazing woman. But my mom just kept saying, that's not enough, that's not enough. Me, myself, when I first found out about it, I was embarrassed. I didn't want anybody to know this was in my family. And I thought, well, our family called it the curse. So I thought, ooh, curse isn't good, so I don't want to talk about this. And my mom looked me in the eye and she said, how can you expect to fix something if you don't announce it and educate people?
Right.
And so she started educating herself, educating others. She talked about it constantly. And I kind of got caught up in the mix, and thankfully so, because she just really went 100% trying to find the cure. And she went to a convention in the 70s. I think it was like 1971. She went to a convention in Boston, Massachusetts, and listened to Dr. Michael Keneally speak. And he said that we have all these people down in Venezuela that we're doing research on, but we need a family in the United States that we can research. So after his speech, Mom went up to him and said, you said you need a family. How many people do you need? And he said, 15. And she said, I can get you 50. And she was blown away, came to Iowa. He was from Indiana. He came to Iowa, and we had the strangest family reunion you can ever imagine.
Wow.
We were giving blood and urine and hair and scrapings and you name it, we did it.
Wow. So that was your whole family?
It was my mom's mother was one of 11 children. So it was from those 11 children on down. She had, I think there were over 100 people that participated.
Oh, my goodness. So did they have that were at risk there and people that were affected?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes, they had both. And they actually did research on the spouses, too, because they wanted to say, okay, this is a person that has absolutely no Huntington's. This one's at risk. Let's compare those two and see what happens to them.
That's smart, to have
them.
A control group.
Correct, yeah. Mm-hmm.
That's amazing. Wow. So your mother, your family, was directly involved in the discovery of the gene.
That's what Dr. Michael Keneally told Mom, that our family made him famous. He was now in the record books. So he used our family, but he put everything, of course, as a number or a letter so that couldn't tell who was who.
That's great, though. Mm-hmm. Okay. Our next super-duper advocate is Stacy Sargent. Are you with us, Stacy?
I'm still here.
Yay, okay. And Stacy's from Douglasville, Georgia. And Corey is her reason for all that she does for JHD. Stacy has had many challenges in her life, which have prepared her for this caregiver advocacy role. We're so proud to have her on the show with us tonight. Welcome to Help Reach You Radio, Stacy. How are you tonight?
Thank you. I'm good.
Yeah. And can we talk to you about Corey? How's Corey doing?
Corey's been doing good. He's actually still taking his afternoon nap right now.
Mm-hmm. So you have some quiet time.
Yes.
Oh, you said he was watching the Christmas tree lights.
Yes. I have a bed in the living room for him, and we put him right beside the Christmas tree so he could see all the lights and the ornaments and give him a change of scenery.
Yeah, that's good. That's good. Does he have favorite things that he likes to watch? And
Yeah, I've put some of his ornaments down towards the bottom. He's, you know, of course, Corey's a big Spider-Man fan. He's a big hockey fan. All of his superhero ornaments and all are down near the bottom, so he can see them real good.
That's good. Now, he was 15 when he was diagnosed?
Yes, ma'am. It was April of 2009 when we finally got him diagnosed.
Wow.
And he had been having trouble for physical symptoms for about 2 years prior to that. And sort of like Sharon was talking earlier, when he was about 10, 11 years old, they tried telling me he had cerebral palsy. And I never let his doctors know that I'm a nurse. And I was like, you don't just get cerebral palsy. I kept telling them, no, something else is. And his neurologist retired, and the pediatrician some tests, and he says, well, let's just wait and see, you know, what happens again. And he was already on medication for ADD, which seemed to be helping some of his problems. Mm-hmm. And then when he had another decline at 13, and that's when he said, okay, I can't help with this. We need to find a neurologist. And all the neurologists looked at me like I was crazy. And then finally, the fourth we had went to told me I was right, that it couldn't have been CP, and he thought it was a metabolic disorder because Corey kept having a lot of nausea and vomiting and digestive issues. He even sent us to a GI doctor. After a year of running tests for metabolic disorders, he finally sent us to Emory.
Mm-hmm.
And that was probably about that was in 2009. And the doctor at Emory, Corey was so pale and thin at that point, he was like, why are you not in the hospital with this child? And I said, that's what I'm trying to get.
Mm-hmm.
And the doctor there actually escorted us to the nearest children's hospital and escorted us to the floor. We went straight through the emergency room to the floor. And he stayed with me until the neurologist he had called in got there to see us.
Stacy, you know, we were talking a little bit earlier, and I think Katie's on with us. Katie, are you there? I think Katie's just listening. She's probably just listening to us.
Hi, guys.
But anyway, hey,
there she is.
I know Katie wanted to say hello to everyone.
Hi, everyone, and thank you for coming on the show, and thank you for all that you guys do for the Huntington's community.
Thank you.
Hey, Katie.
Thank you, Katie. What you're doing is amazing.
Oh, thank you. I called in real quick to listen to Stacy speak about JHD, and this is really interesting hearing. So I was muted in the background, so I'm going to go back on mute and listen intently to everything that she's saying.
Katie, do you want to tell Stacy what we're doing in Sacramento in June?
Yeah, on June 6th, we are going to have a juvenile Huntington's disease walk at McKinley Park in Sacramento, California. And all the money, all net proceeds are going to go to Dr. Jan Nolte at UC Davis for her new JHD research initiative. So she's starting to do JHD research in her lab, and they've been working on it for a while now. And so we're going to try to get as much funding as we can to that research team who's dedicating research to JHD. So that's exciting for everyone. You don't have to show up to walk. We actually are going to have it. We're going to try to make it a campaign and try to get as much money to Dr. Nolte to look at JHD as possible. And so we will start. The walk is June 6th, but Melissa and Sharon and I have talked about starting the campaign in the next couple of weeks, and we will get, hopefully we can get this research accelerated with getting more money. Obviously, research is a lot of money, but this is important research.
Let me ask you this, Emory.
Stacy, go ahead.
I'm happy Katie called because I've been trying to get Emory into doing juvenile research because we have so many families at Emory now. But Yeah, Katie, definitely keep me informed on the walk in June.
I will. Thank you. Yes, I will keep you updated.
Yes,
one
ma'am.
One of the things that we found is that when we offer the researchers a campaign, direct money, they get their butts in gear and do something for us.
Yeah.
And they can't say no to us because we are going to be fighting and working really hard to raise the money directly to go to their program. So that's
mm-hmm.
one of the things we're working really hard on. But, Katie, thank you so much for coming on. And I know you're probably busy at work and stuff, but go ahead and mute if you need to. But thank you so much. And, Stacy, we're just so we feel like juvenile Huntington's should be our priority. Our kids should come first. And I think, you know, in the past, we haven't really addressed this, and I think it's something that really needs to be put out there, that our kids need to be first, you know?
Well,
and
it's
Melissa,
not only
correct
that.
Me if I'm wrong, but isn't this going to be the first clinical trial ever for JHD that Jane Nolte is going to do?
As far as we know,
mm-hmm.
we don't know of any other clinical trials. Now, there are studies
right.
that are being done. But as far as a clinical trial specifically for JHD, we don't know of any others, unless I could be wrong. But if anybody's out there and needs to correct me, please do. But
Well, Melissa, the study, sorry to break back into it, but the study, we do have HD Kids, of course, as a study. But as far as the clinical trial, this research is probably very far off from actually going into clinical trial. Right now it is research. But
mm-hmm.
The one thing I learned with Dr. Jan Nolte and being on the scene when she first talked about using mesenchymal stem cells for the first therapy ever for Huntington's disease, 8 years ago it was research, and now they are enrolling patients into this study. I mean, into this clinical trial. I'm sorry, into this clinical trial 8 years later.
Yeah.
So the key is to try to, you know, I don't think, unfortunately, I think we are far off from actually having a clinical trial for juvenile Huntington's, but we'll never
right.
have a clinical trial for juvenile Huntington's if we don't start research for juvenile Huntington's. So
right.
this is important. This is, to me, a monumental kind of step, is to actually have a research team dedicate for an actual, you know, possible therapy eventually for the children. And I think we need to come together as a community and support that for the children. And hopefully, you know, and hopefully, who knows, this can translate to adults and everything else. So
mm-hmm.
I think this is historic, and I think this is exciting for our community to finally have a researcher focused on juvenile Huntington's disease, and especially one as brilliant as Dr. Jan Nolte. So we're excited to support her in any way we can, especially launching this first campaign. So as far as a clinical trial, we're probably pretty far off, but we have to start somewhere.
Yeah, we have to start now. We can't wait. You know, do it now.
mm-hmm.
And, you know, our motto kind of with the JHD initiative, and we have a helpforjhd.org website, and, you know, our tagline is our children come first. You know, we have to take care of our kids first and then worry about other people after that, you know. But Stacy, getting back to your interview here, we were talking a little bit before the show started about some of the challenges that you have faced. Now, you know, some of us with adult HD, we have challenges, but I think the JHD challenges seem to be even more devastating. Have you found that to be true?
Yeah, because like I said, it took me 2 years and five different neurologists just to get someone to listen to me that there was something
mm-hmm.
wrong with me. And then even then we were in the hospital about 2 weeks and I had my husband bring a video of when Corey was walking and playing like a normal child, and the neurologist and the students look at it and they're like, oh, is that his brother and sister? I'm like, no, that's him. Mm-hmm. And you could see the look of shock on the neurologist's face, where, you know, because she thought he'd always been the way he was at the time. And it was, she asked to take the tape home and show it to her husband and the neurologist who had escorted us there. And she comes in the next day by herself, and I knew it was bad. And wow. She had an aide sit with Corey, and she took me in a room, and she says, we're 99.9% sure it's juvenile Huntington's. And
so you didn't know that there was a family history or anything?
No. Corey got it from his biological father, who was only in the picture until Corey was 6 months old.
Mm-hmm.
And, again, I was a teenager when I started having kids and got married, and honestly don't remember if they ever mentioned that Huntington's ran in their family or not.
Yeah, probably didn't, you know, at that point.
They didn't, because I know his biological father's father had left them when he was young, and I was always told it was because he was an alcoholic and a drug addict, which my ex, that was part of the reason we split up, was his alcohol and drug abuse.
Mm-hmm.
Hindsight being what it is, I wonder if he was exhibiting some signs of Huntington's then.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. But I don't think so. I think it was the drugs and alcohol.
Mm-hmm. Do you know if his biological father is still living or...
Yes, someone contacted me, a mutual friend, I guess about 2 years ago, because they found out he had Huntington's and was worried about, you know, the kids.
Mm-hmm.
And she found me online through Facebook and told me she was writing to let me know that he had this disease and it could be passed on. And I told her, just thank you for the information. I already know Corey was diagnosed, you know, 2 or 3 years ago. And
that was nice of her to come forward to you, though.
It was, because she was a very good friend of his, so I kept her at arm's bay probably up until just this past year. She came out to one of Corey's events,
mm-hmm.
and we sat down and had a long talk. So.
Now, you were also stating that you were having issues with social services.
Yes, when Corey was first diagnosed with the Huntington's in 2009, he spent 3 months in and out of the hospital. So, of course, I took family medical leave. And the hospital applied for Medicaid for him and disability and everything. When I went to Social Security to give them information, I gave them my FMLA papers. So they knew I was only going to be out of work for 12 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I went back to work, and I said, hey, I'm back at work. His check decreased a little bit. Long story short, the year came up for his review. The lady turned off the recorder, and she says, you remember I asked you about your husband's income? And I said, yeah. She says, you remember how I had to ask you for numbers for your income? And I said, yeah. She says, we had you as working, but we had nothing for you.
Hmm.
Yeah. So I said, wait a minute. You have my FMLA papers. I called the person, told them I was back at work. And about 3 months later, they sent me a bill for over $10,000. Yeah.
Goodness.
And so I tried to fight it on my own several times.
Mm.
Actually got kicked out of the Social Security office a couple of times.
Yep.
finally, we hired a lawyer. Corey's been on hospice for almost 3 years now, and a lawyer that specializes in disability had done a class or seminar or something at that hospice group, and they went to him about Corey, and he gave her his card and said, here, one for you and one for this family. And we called him up, and he was very eager to meet us. We went into his office, and I came in with a huge box of paperwork, and we went to court, I guess about a month later, And even the judge was shaking his head because they had it in their investigation where, yeah, Social Security dropped the ball.
Oh, my goodness.
And didn't do their job. So, yeah, we, 4 years, and it was ruled that I didn't have to pay back the money, plus the money that they were keeping out of his check, they had to pay back.
Mm-hmm. That's good. And, you know, it does take legal action. We can't do this by ourselves.
You can't fight them on your own.
No.
But I ended up having to get a lawyer and hire a case manager to get help for Randy.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's just, and all the torment they put you through when you're already going so much, you know, it's when we won that case, you would not imagine the weight that was lifted off our shoulders.
Mm-hmm.
My husband and I walked out of that courtroom and we were like, wow. You know, we did not realize the weight we were carrying from it until it was gone. Yeah.
I mean, it's hard enough having to deal with Huntington's disease, juvenile Huntington's disease, and then all this other stuff just piles up. It's just amazing.
And we took Corey to court with us. I mean, it was, you know, we took him in and we let the judge see that he's on oxygen and a tube feeding and that he has to be suctioned and let him see that, you know, he was dystonic and in pain and, you know, we let the judge see all that, and the judge just, the judge looked like he was about to cry.
Oh.
So yeah. I was thankful that we got someone with a heart.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Stacy, what is the most important thing that you want people to know about being an advocate? And this is being an advocate for your loved one, being an advocate for others.
Knowing is half the battle. For us, once we got the diagnosis, and knowing it was the correct diagnosis, that is what steered us in the right direction. We knew what battles to fight and what battles to neglect, so to speak.
Yeah.
Priorities,
right?
Correct, yeah. You know, like Sharon said, some of your friends disappear, and, you know, some of our friends, you know, that cause drama, it's like, you know, we're at a point in our life where we have to pick and choose our battles.
That's true.
But I think the most important thing would be education, knowing the disease, knowing what's going on in the research world, what's going on with clinical trials, going to the conventions, going to your Team Hope walks, because it's an unfortunate disease that brings us all together, but my juvenile Huntington's family is just that. They're family.
Right.
You know, we have this connection because we understand each other.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's one of the most important things is just having that go-to person that when you're at wit's end because your loved one is having a bad day that, you know, you can call and cry on someone else's shoulder and they understand. They're there to listen.
Well, our hearts go out to you, Stacy, and we think of you every day, and we're watching you, and we're so proud of you for all that you're doing. And if there's anything that you need, we want you to call us and let us know.
I will.
Okay. Next up is Vicki Owen from Sun City Center. Are you with us, Vicki?
I am. Hello.
And she's in Florida. Is it sunny over there?
No.
Oh.
No, it's cool. It's cool for Florida, but it was kind of nice today.
No, good. Well, Vicki is very active in the Central Florida HDSA Chapter Affiliate Committee. She's also the chair of Cocktails for a Cure. That sounds like fun. Sounds like something I'd like to be doing right now. among other activities. Her husband, Tom, is battling it now, and I think he's listening to us. Hi, Tom.
He is.
Her story I found to be very interesting, and I'm starting to realize that there are some common points as well as differences in how we're all kind of introduced to HD. Vicki, welcome to the show tonight. How are you?
I'm good tonight. Thank you. How are you, Melissa?
I'm good. I'm trying to be ready for Christmas, but I'm not.
Tom just said hello. He just heard
you. Hi, Tom. Yeah. Okay, so tell us about how and when Tom was diagnosed. And I know your story is kind of unique, but also there are some very similar aspects to it than as most of us.
It was really the end of 2009 when we were taking him to get tested for ADHD in adults. His focus and attention was really off, and he was having a lot of angry outbursts, and we didn't know HD was in the family at all, had never heard the words before. And his nephew called one day to see how his uncle was doing, and he had asked us if we had ever heard that my husband's father had Huntington's chorea. And his father had been, I guess he had died about 10 years before that, or even 15 years, of prostate cancer, and never heard the words Huntington's in the family mentioned. So we brought that up with the psychiatrist, and he said, oh my goodness, you need to go see a neurologist. And we were referred to University of South Florida Center of Excellence. And we went there in January 2010, and they did the DNA test, and the results did come back positive for Huntington's disease. And so that was the first we ever heard of it. And so I started looking, asking questions. We went to support group. Of course, there were a lot of people there, and Tom at the time didn't have a lot of symptoms. And at the time we went to our first support group, there were a lot of people there that were much worse than him, and I think it scared him, and we didn't go back to support group for like 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
But once we found out, you know, how it could affect different people, and he's late onset. He's 69.
Mm-hmm.
He was diagnosed at 64. So we just started going back and talking to different people, and now we don't miss a support group. He enjoys going, and he still has a sense of humor and keeps everybody else laughing at support group, so that's a good positive thing for him. But we didn't really know. We had, after we first found out, we started asking some questions. And most of this family has since passed on.
Mm-hmm.
And we did not know that there were a couple of cousins we heard that had Huntington's. And just recently, in this past month, we found out that there are way more people in the family that have Huntington's that we knew about in his father's side. Out of 7 siblings, 5 had Huntington's.
Oh, wow.
But were misdiagnosed with other things like Parkinson's and mental illness and
mm-hmm.
not Huntington's.
That is kind of a common thread that we're finding.
Yeah.
I've heard of other families having this as well, you know.
So what
was your mission when you found out? I mean, did you want to just completely?
Well, we wanted to find out as much as we could about it and, you know, how far away was the cure? What were they doing about finding a cure? We didn't know about it, and our friends had never heard about it. So I guess our mission was to make everybody we know
mm-hmm.
know about Huntington's and help us, you know, spread the word, I guess. Make everybody
yeah.
aware that there's a devastating and little-known disease out there that really needs everybody's help.
Well, and it seems like you're on a mission to make every minute count and to bring fun to your advocacy, which is my idea to, you know, if we can't cure this thing right now, we've got to somehow make it through, you know.
And, we do.
Try to have fun while doing it. So what? Why is it important, do you think, to create fun ways to bring advocacy and awareness to HD?
Well, I think it's a way that people can relate. For instance, my Cocktails for a Cure. We get different bars around the area, the Tampa Bay area, to donate drinks and appetizers. And we go in and we talk about, even the research doctor at USF even comes to the cocktails. And we always give him a few minutes to talk and tell people what Huntington's is and why it's important that they know and they tell their friends and everybody can donate to the research fund and try to help us as much as possible to get the word out about Huntington's disease. And I think one way of doing it is with Cocktails for a Cure, because who doesn't want a cocktail after work, you know?
And, now, you're doing the Cocktails for the Cure is actually going right to the researcher, right?
It definitely goes to the researcher at the Center of Excellence in at USF in Tampa. Yes. The first one we did was actually put on by the chapter affiliate, and they kind of put me in charge of finding these. And I said, "Well, if I do it, I want the money to go to USF." Instead of HDSA. So, sorry, folks, but it's going to USF.
That's what you got to do.
Well, you put me in charge, and that's what I'm going to do.
Mm-hmm. That's great. Well, let's kind of have a little roundtable. I've only got about 12 more minutes left here, so... I kind of wanted to talk about the different events that everyone has done. And Stacy's done some really fun ones. Stacy, tell us about your event. Did we lose Stacy? We may have.
Hold on.
Her. Oh.
There
she is.
Can you hear me now?
Okay. Yep, yep.
We do Corey's Crusade Poker Run every year. And actually last year we changed it up and did a hold on. Can you hear me now?
Yes, we can hear you.
I'm playing Ring Around the Phones here. We changed it up and did a scavenger hunt, which we may do next year. I haven't decided yet. But it originally started because we were so far behind on bills from Corey being in and out of the hospital and me out of work that some of our family in our biker community decided to do a fundraiser for us.
Oh, that's great.
And during the event, one of our very good friends came to us and she said that she had been researching juvenile Huntington's and that she knew that as long as Corey was alive, we were going to need their help. So that she wanted me to do it every year. And so the second year came around, and I went to my girlfriends. I said, okay, come on, let's do this. And they were like, no, one was enough. So I've done it, my husband and I, pretty much on our own. But yeah, it's a fun day of raising awareness. And in our community, it's a lot of the smaller businesses that we get involved in. I have a few that have donated their time and monies and services every year. And Corey likes it because he loves the sound of the motorcycles.
Yeah. That's great. And then you're doing another, what was the other one that you told me?
I have a friend here who lost her mother a while back to Huntington's disease. She and her brother, she has tested positive for Huntington's. Mm-hmm. And her brother owns a car wash, and it's called Mammoth Car Wash. So he decided to do the Tusk Run And this is the second year, and we all dress up as cavemen and cave women and do a 5K run.
That's so funny. And do you go to a park and do this? So everybody's staring at you like, what are you doing?
The first year, it was actually in the city of Alpharetta, so we were out in public doing this. And the second year, he decided to do a trail run, and I think it's going to be at this trail from now on, which is fine because it's right across from a very big outlet mall that they had just built in that area. Okay. So we had, I'd say out of the 300 people that showed up, maybe only 50 were personally affected by Huntington's.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
And then you're doing the Team Hope Walk, too.
Yeah, we do the Team Hope Walk, and we wear our shirts that we do every year for Corey's Crusade Ride. We have T-shirts made up for that every year, so everyone knows that, you know, he's the juvenile. And then, you know, with the Corey Crusade ride that I do every year, I give a portion of it to our HDSA chapter here and some to University of Iowa, because up until recently they were the only ones doing juvenile research. They sent someone down last year.
Oh, that's right.
Set up a table and all that. And, of course, Maddie Ellison from HDYO. Always send stuff, because I have just as many kids that participate in Corey's Crusade as I do adults. The kids, we get a truck together and pile them all in one big truck, and they go play poker with the kids or with the adults and do the scavenger hunt last year. They really liked that. So.
Oh, that's fun. Are you using... Are you using technology for your scavenger hunt? I think they're using GPS now.
Actually, no. Last year, because Corey graduated high school, which was something we didn't think we were going to get to see. So
yeah,
we did his ride the weekend of graduation.
Oh, wow.
And graduation was our theme. So everyone had to take pictures of road signs or items that began with each letter and brought it to us. And so, yeah, it was fun. I'll probably do items.
Hey, Roberta, are you guys doing events too over there?
Yes, we have several events that we do as well. Of course, we do the Team Hope. And we do a Celebration of Hope dinner.
Tell about the challenge, the dare thing that you told me about.
The Bar to Barbara?
Yeah.
That one is hilarious. It's the most fun I've ever had in one day. And we've been doing it since 2010. One of my cousins, when her mom passed away with HD, she said, it was her, she promised herself that she was going to make a difference. And this young lady has raised over $100,000 on her own with this fundraiser.
Ooh. Wow.
And what she does, the first year there were like 8 participants, the second year about 30, and it just keeps growing and growing. We had over 100 this year and 100 the year before. But what she does, she says, I will do anything, and I mean anything, as long as it's morally sound and fun, but you have to pay to do it. And so you dare her to do these goofy things, and then it started out that each dare cost $25. Well, now it has grown to where people dare each other, and people shave their heads. I dare you to shave your head, and then raise money, and they'll raise, like, one kid raised $300, and another one will raise several hundred dollars. But she does the goofiest
thing. She had someone make a cake on her head one time. She has eaten crickets. She's eaten earthworms. She stood on her head and sang. Oh, gosh, what's some of the silly things she did? Oh, she dresses in the most outrageous garb that you can imagine. And it is just hilarious.
Oh, my
and it, the kids get involved. The adults get involved. And it goes on. She starts doing the deers about 2 weeks before. And she, this year she raised, I think, I can't remember whether it was $27,000 or $30,000. But that was just this year.
That's a lot.
Yeah. And her goal for next year is $50,000. She just keeps notching it up a little. She did, this year she also did a Bar to Barbara in Arizona, where she lives. She lives in Arizona, but she's from Iowa, so she comes back to Iowa every summer and does this fundraiser. And then she decided her Arizona friends were missing out, so she does one in Arizona now, too. So it is just outrageous and fun and silly. Just great fun. And
that's what I call
it.
Fundraisers.
The Hoopathon, too.
Fundraisers, not fundraisers.
Yeah.
That's great.
So it's a lot of fun.
Do we have other events that we haven't talked about? Types of advocacy events? Vicki, did you have other events that you were working on too?
Yes, I'm sorry. I was away from the phone for a second there. We are going to do, it sounds funny, but it's called Drag Queen Bingo.
Drag Queen
and
Bingo, that's it. Yeah, I knew
bingo.
There was another one. Okay,
and,
tell us about it.
There's a restaurant in the Tampa Bay area. They have two locations, and it's called Hamburger Mary. And it is staffed by drag queens and gay wait staff.
Oh my gosh, that's funny. Oh
and
my
they
gosh.
They're so funny, and you come in and you pay $10 and you play 10 games of bingo. And they usually have about feeding for about 300. So
wow.
All the proceeds for the bingo goods go directly to our research or to our
fantastic.
Their event, to our fund. And then 50-50 and everything else. But it's a lot of fun, and the drag queen is hilarious. She just makes us laugh so hard. So we're having two this week.
Oh, my goodness. That's fun. Well, I think the key to this whole thing is try to have some fun while you're out there advocating, because you know what? It's a hard way to live, right?
It is. Absolutely.
Well, and those kind of outrageous things also get people's attention.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Actually, they just had our affiliate just had an event that was really funny, too. It's called Chicken Drop Bingo. And they have this huge bingo board with numbers from 0 to 100, and you put a chicken in there, and wherever the chicken poops, and whoever has that ticket number wins.
Oh, my gosh.
We sell tickets for each game, and it's like a 50-50 is the prize. So,
oh my gosh.
We have, like, you know. So there's a lot of fun ways to make money, and we try to find them.
Too funny. Well, you know, how do you get people involved? You create funny events like this. That's hilarious.
Yeah. Just
well, listen,
post them on all the social networks.
This has been an amazing show. I just want to thank. We're out of time. I've got 1 minute left here. But I just want to thank everyone. Thank you, Sharon, Stacy, Vicki, and Roberta, for coming on and sharing your lives with us. It's just been fun.
You're welcome.
Thank you for all your hard work. And we welcome questions and comments and stories from all of you out there who are listening. And After the show, you may want to send your inquiries to melissa@helpforhd.org. And I just want to thank you again for tuning into the show. There's so many others out there who are fighting and advocating for JHD and HD. We thank all of you out there. We all need to work together. And we wish to just honor you and thank you. And y'all have a great holiday season, safe. And we'll conclude the show. Don't forget to come back and listen to the archived episodes. We have 200-plus episodes now. And also free downloads are available on iTunes.com, Help for HD. And we'll be talking to you next week. We're going to have some pre-recorded shows for the next 2 weeks with the holidays. But thank you again, and we'll talk to you next week. Have a good night.
You too.
Good to talk to y'all.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Bye.